Okay, and over to you, team.
Okay, well, we had voted on questions one and two, so we are now moving on to the section of the paper. This is paragraphs 19 to 26. It's agenda paper 21D. Paragraphs 19 to 26 look at possible guidance on characteristics that might result in the need for either aggregation or disaggregation. And the questions for the board are set out after paragraph 26. So I shall just hand over to you for comments, questions.
I think a simple question is whether you expected the characteristics that would be provided to be an exhaustive list or illustrative.
Illustrative, definitely not exhaustive, okay. And we'd make that clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good point.
It's hard shifting gears from DRM to this.
Yes, sorry, you didn't even have a chance to get a cup of coffee. So.
I
don't see any questions. Can I just ask Bruce and Tadeo whether you have any comments? Because our monitor is currently weak. No, I see shaking hand. Okay, I think then we are ready to vote. Oh, sorry, Tadeo. What was that? No, you don't have anything. You're fine. All right, okay. So let's take that opportunity and vote. Can I see a show of hands who agrees with the board with the question? Thank you. Question three. That's unanimous, is it? 12. Okay, excellent.
Great, thank you. All right, the next section of the paper looks at topics that are specific to disclosure in the notes. And the first question is following on from comments that board members made in April about whether we could add some sort of guidance about the identification of material classes, given it's not possible to set quantitative thresholds for materiality. So it was quite difficult to come up with very much, but we've developed some thoughts, some indications in paragraph 28, which we think might help just push people to think about whether more disaggregation is needed.
As I said on an unauthorised basis earlier on, I like these, even though they're quite simple statements. I think it's helpful to give preparers steers on, you know, the high-level things to think about to guide them, so I'm supportive of these ideas.
Ginger.
Thank you, Agnes. I have some concern. Actually, I'm happy with A, because A is built on whether those items are similar or not, in a device or not. So I think it's really related to our foundation to aggregation of those items, whether they are similar or dissimilar. But in relation to the B, I worry about that because it depends on amount or the size of the class of those items rather than the nature or, you know, other characteristics. For example, some companies got very big number of revenue or big number of PPE, whether they needed to disaggregate it further without considering other things. So I'm not sure the guidance of B would help too much in relation to disaggregation. I'm happy with A, but I'm not happy with B. Yeah, this is my comment on this question four.
I mean, I agree it is quite simplistic, but it is, you know, it is meant to just get at the fact that if you have a very large number that isn't broken down, just think about whether there is some information being obscured within that large number. It's not very sophisticated. I'm not claiming that, but it is just to give you a prompt to think about it.
But I still worry about, OK, those guys, because this would be a requirement. So those accountants really will go through those big numbers, even their group of similar, you know, similar items, but they need to go through this process whether it's really helpful, you know. Yeah, I think, just my observation about it.
The question is, I mean, this is, I wouldn't say this is a requirement, but please correct me, right? This is really just a reminder for you to check. If you come across a big balance, can you be reasonably assured that everything that is in that line item is actually reasonably similar, or do you have to break down further? That's really what this is saying, I think. So it's not really that you have to go through it item by item. And I think, I don't use the word rebuttable, but I mean, it's very easy to actually just demonstrate these are all the same issues, the same items, right?
I have the exact same discomfort as Qin Chao on this B. I think it's a pure guess. We have not been provided with any evidence that it is true in all circumstances. So to set principles on such a statement seems very odd to me. I have no problem with A. A seems effectively obvious, but the second one is not that obvious at all. I think this morning I didn't say that, but rather than material, I think when it comes to reporting, and notably to external reporting, it's not material that is relevant, it's significant. And significant can be quantitatively or qualitatively significant. An amount set at zero is not material. It's not quantitatively material, but it may be significant to present.
Quantitatively material, potentially.
Yeah. It's significant.
No,
it's material.
We worked for 2 years to get rid of significant.
sorry, buddy, but maybe significant is not the sorry. I don't
Material's
want to.
Right word.
I don't want to embarrass the board if you have already get rid of a significant. What I want to say is just, a word that was used this morning and probably that will be less controversial, meaningful. A number at zero on a certain class of asset may be meaningful to present in the balance sheet.
In which case it would be material. Sure.
I appreciate that. But my point is, on the other hand, you may have very big numbers, like Qin Chao said, that are effectively relevant in the sense that it's just a single class of assets. And so the second assessment is I mean, as long as it is not demonstrated, proven, I don't see how we can just set that as an affirmation. I mean, so I'm not that comfortable with the B also.
Nick?
Yeah, the same. Really, in a nutshell, I mean, it may be the way it's worded, but I dispute the way it's worded. The larger the asset class, the more likely it's gone. Whether you position it as a prompt to ask a question, that to me feels slightly different. But the way it's worded, it just didn't strike a chord with me.
Okay. And please.
Thanks, Andreas. So in this discussion of we're going to vote on something, well, we've got this word class again, I just wasn't sure, given our discussion earlier today, about what we're meaning by class. So it's a question for Anne, how is that relevant at this point in this question? And then my second question is, as I look at what's being proposed, I think it is useful because it helps people as they think about materiality. And I just would like to know whether staff have looked at the way this potentially interacts with the materiality practice statement. Thank you.
Right. So on the first question, my understanding from this morning was that there was concern about the way that the paper used class to mean every every type of grouping that we might want to see information provided about. And of course, that's what class is meaning here. But it doesn't mean that we would having had the discussion this morning, we would think about how to word it. So it might not be just a class. I don't know. I need to think through the implications of you not feeling comfortable with using class for every possible grouping. But here, I'm talking about every grouping that would give material information, even if we didn't describe some of those as classes. And then on the materiality practice statement, we have there's nothing in here that is in any way inconsistent with the material in the materiality practice statement. There's nothing in the materiality practice statement that says this. So this is just additional indications of where you might think there could be material information that we would be putting into the standard that's going to replace IS1, where we're talking about this very general disclosure requirement. But it's completely consistent with everything that's in that practice statement.
Well, memory serves me well. I think there's something in the materiality practice statement, I can't see it in a second, that says in the first instance, if something's big, it's more likely to be material. I think there's an observation along those lines, but it's just like an initial steer type thing, but I'm going from memory. But it's slightly different to saying it's big, therefore look and see if there's more bits within it.
Mm.
Yes, I'd need to go back and look, but I don't know, I'm afraid, off the top of my head.
Bruce?
Thanks very much, Andreas. I kind of took a read of these and said, okay. In other words, I wasn't convinced they were adding to it. And I mean, we've had the discussion around number two that I have obviously the same concerns as everybody else. I'm not going to go into those. But I also had a little bit of a concern about A. I mean, to me, if I've kind of been through the exercise of looking at what my line items are, I've done the aggregation in terms of the requirements that we've got there, I've decided what I'm putting together, all this does is says to me, well, check if they're diverse items, and I've already kind of been through that filter of deciding which items to aggregate, because I would have had to have gone through a decision to aggregate given they were different in the first place. All this is saying to me is, well, once you've done that, check again that you haven't done it wrong. And I guess it just kind of says to me, are we not just saying the same thing a different way? And I appreciate that it gives guidance, and I appreciate that maybe it is coming a bit there, but obvious. But it kind of says to me, do I think it's adding to the standard? You know, in other words, if we had to add two extra paragraphs to the new standard, do I really think that it's going to change the way people apply the standard? And do I think it's going to change the way the application they're doing? And I'm just not convinced that it would. I do. If these go in, as I say, I don't think they're wrong. I think they're great. But I just, you know, I think any sort of guidance is great. I just get a bit worried that on A, we're kind of double guessing what we've told people to do when they apply the aggregation disaggregation principles to start with, and on B, much like others, I do get worried that we're saying, well, hang on, when something gets big, immediately you need to look at could it be material to disaggregate, etc. I think it's quite a bold statement in B that once again just kind of takes me over the step of guidance as opposed to kind of potentially another requirement. And as much as I appreciate there may not be requirements in practice, when people read these things, a lot of guys will look at it and say, well, hang on, here's another check step I need to put in, here's another kind of filter I need to put these things through, and the moment you fail one, you're going to have somebody saying, well, am I going to get questioned by the auditors, am I going to have the regulators on top of me? I'm just not convinced that that's going to add to it. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks, Bruce.
Rika.
Thank you. I probably agree with what Bruce already mentioned. I mean, I'm not pretty much convinced to include these two paragraphs in the standard. I mean, especially because we understand that entity should apply general principle of materiality when they determine whether need to disaggregate or aggregate. So this is a kind of the natural outcome when the entity applies general principle of materiality. So it's kind of the observation what should happen as a result of applying the materiality properly.
So I don't, probably I will support if staff said it might be good to include practice statement. I would support that, but not in the standards as a text.
Tadeo.
Thank you, Andreas. I also struggle with this paragraph. I think that would be better to be included in the base for conclusion. In the caput of the paragraph, I still have some situation, as Jean Chao described. I thought about that as well. I mean, that I understand the idea, but bringing this as a paragraph of the standard, I don't think that would be helpful. I would make comment and subject to some wording in the base for conclusion, not in the standard. Thank you.
Mary.
I think I want to go back to Rika's suggestion, but I'm doing this in part to apply the discipline that I was encouraging the staff to apply this morning, which is to think about how we do things with the, you know, the minimum words necessary. And you know, I love to say that the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and sometimes our attempts to be helpful add in extra chat that can come back to bite us in the end. So when I read the paper, I was fine with this suggestion, in part because it did no harm. But I guess thinking about the concerns people have raised, I think Rika put her finger on it. Is this something that is very good, useful material for the materiality practice statement that we should be thinking about adding there? Because it's a kind of practice, how do you sanity check that you've done it right versus writing it into the authoritative language of the standard.
So having listened to the debate, my gut feeling is there is not much uptake for the proposal, but you already, I mean, alluded to it, that it will be difficult to make it any more precise, so hence the proposal to keep it fairly general. But my sense is that there was limited uptake by board members to say, is this really useful? Is this adding anything that isn't already there? But I'm happy to take a vote to just, for the record,
just so I can put my hand up.
See where we are. Okay.
In favor of a staff recommendation.
All right. Can I see a show of hands who supports the staff recommendation?
Yes, oh, for wow. Reducing complexity. Three.
Okay. All right.
Four. Do we have someone online?
And is there as well? Four.
Oh, okay. Hey, I'm sorry, Miss Dan. Yeah, four.
Okay. The next question is whether there should be any cost relief for the requirement to disclose all material classes and classes, as I mean, whatever, or, you know,
the things
that we'll find
the
a word to describe. So here it's really a question of, because this is such a general requirement, is it like almost the principles in the conceptual framework, which are always balanced by a cost constraint? Or is it in fact a requirement that's there already and that people should be applying and that they should not be a cost relief? So the question for the board is set out after paragraph 35.
All right. Jin Chao.
Thank you. I have concern about, introduce this new requirement or say that the disclosure information about material classes of assets should only apply to the extent that information available from the entity's internal reporting system. First, I think that, for example, I think I just mentioned, for example, some companies maybe they classify some assets based on the measurement basis, for example, fair value or historical. And when they measure those assets at fair value, actually they use information not internally, but also use the information, for example, market price or other things. So if we only limited those information for internal reporting system, is it sufficient enough? Secondly, I really worry because what we are developing is to develop the proposal is that all those information would be included in the external reporting. And to meet the information needs of internal, you know, users. And we introduced the notion, okay, those information should be limited to those information available for internal reporting system. And we all know that the objective content of internal reporting may be very significant difference from external reporting. So how can we justify, you know, to limit those information only to be those information available for internal reporting system? So I'm not sure question five, you know, would really be helpful actually without any harm to our general principle.
Perhaps I could just clarify that available from the entity's internal reporting systems, this is meant to be just a relief to say that if they don't already have the information, they don't need to go away and collect new information just for the purpose of this general disclosure requirement. So maybe the phrase internal reporting system isn't the best phrase. I certainly wasn't meaning to say that you can't use information that's available from different sources. It's meant to be just the cost relief to say you don't need to go and create, you know, new information that you don't already have.
My question, for example, some companies, they measure the fair value based on those observable inputs or price from the market rather than their internal, you know, reporting purpose. And they classify those, material class of those assets based on that one. I think that information should be disclosed. And rather than, okay, the information should only limit those information available for your internal reporting purpose. I think it will cause, you know.
I think probably the emphasis that you put on the word internal is different to ends.
Yeah, so this.
If you exchanged internal to existing, probably it makes it clearer. So there is no requirement for you to rebuild systems in order to be able to provide extra information. You take the information that your systems can produce, and that includes certainly market information. That's really the meaning.
But the key point is that actually, as I said, that we are focused on the external reporting. We all know that the financial reporting definition, financial reporting, and the financial statement. But the one way we introduce the notion of internal reporting system or internal reporting, and actually we have no definition of internal reporting. What's the boundary? How much information will be included? Whether we need to develop additional definition? I think that is another issue. This, really, I worry about what's the boundary of that. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Mary.
Maybe it's being late in the afternoon, but I was going to identify concerns at three levels: policy, operational, and substance. And so, from the policy perspective, you very correctly referred back to our experience with the exposure draft on what was it, accounting policy changes. When we took that language from the conceptual framework about the cost constraint and proposed making it an entity-specific determination, and a lot of what we heard was people reminding us that that was really put in there for a kind of a universal determination that the board should stop and consider when it was writing requirements. So from a policy perspective, I think it's right that you pause and ask us to think about whether we expect this kind of broadly worded requirement would meet cost benefit. But I think if we consider that, if we believe that it would, and I do, because I think the concept of materiality is sufficient to deal with it, that from a policy perspective, we should not be, you know, we've learned not to say that that's an entity-specific determination of cost-benefit, that cost-benefit is really something we should do at a standard-setting level. In terms of the operationality, you know, available, even if we shifted from internal reporting to existing reporting or something to deal with some of Ninjao's concerns. I think we'd start getting questions like, well, what if I, you know, does it have to be measured in accordance with how IFRS would require it to be measured in order for it to be considered available? Well, what if I only change one piece or there's just one piece missing? You know, I think it would just become a source of endless debates and would frankly cost preparers as much to debate it as it would for the relief. But then third, I come back to my point that I think the concept of materiality, which is, you know, what we should be considering, if the information is material, then, you know, and it's about groups of items in the financial statements, then why would we say you don't have to provide material information if you don't happen to have it handy? And, you know, which is, I think, about what it comes back to. Certainly, requirements in financial reporting standards are what have driven changes in what information is existing, is available. So I think we should not be providing the cost relief. But I think we can discuss, not give additional application guidance, but discuss in the basis for conclusions why we think that reliance on materiality should be sufficient in this area. Because, you know, your point about would we expect an immense gap between something that we think is material and something that the entity is not collecting for its own internal, you know, it means they aren't managing something that we think is material information, and that you can't have a lot of those piling up or they're big problems. So, sorry, don't support the staff recommendation, in case you wondered.
Thanks, and I guess my point carries on from Mary's last point, in that it seems that this is... It seems to me the cost has, the marginal cost has to be about zero to meet this test, which just seems to be, you know, doesn't seem to move us in the direction we want to go on this. That unless you can, it's readily available, it's not going to cost you anything. That's the only reason why you would do it. I think that's not the right threshold.
Can you recap?
Thank you. I don't support staff's recommendation because I think as a standard setter, we can bend the principle of application of materiality. But if we miss this opportunity to ask the preparers and stakeholders to provide more useful information, applying a new requirement of disaggregation and aggregation, we never get there. I mean, I truly think we shouldn't heavily rely on the existing reporting system, because even though disaggregation and aggregation principle are quite based on the fact we consider it should be applied in current practice, but still we enhance the requirements within and clarify how they can do much better than what they are doing right now. So I think I understand that we need some kind of cost relief to support the preparer to implement new idea or new guideline. But still, I think if we limit this opportunity to the extent of the what type of the what existing reporting system they have right now, yes, that's too sad for us to do.
You want to come in or later?
I can wait.
Okay, right. Tadeo?
Thank you, Andreas. I think that if it is consistent with what I said in some questions before. I think that if the information is material, it should be disclosed independent of the company's internal control. I think the level of information to be provided should be driven by the IS1 general concept the more we write to require or to provide relief, the more we may distance from the general principle. I like the idea of providing guidance that may help, but add requirement and relief may not. Thank you.
Thank you, Tadeo. Zach.
I'll pass, man.
Your point?
I think it's been made.
All right. Okay. What's wrong?
Following on Nick's comments, as a former preparer, there are not that much that I can answer to Nick. I mean, he makes a fair point. If we state what is written in question Q5, then the limit would be set to zero, effectively. Then on what, of course, I'm more inclined to be sensitive on is the content of the paragraph 35. So basically, IS-37 provides relief for disclosure of confidential information, and it stated then, however, that relief is very limited. So I would have written, when the relief applies, it enables the company to avoid potential material consequences. And I use material as I've understood, I should use material based on our previous discussion. So rather than having focused on the existence or non-existence of of a relief for companies, of the existence or non-existence or information coming from the existing internal reporting system, I would have more inclined to eventually consider things around requirements relating to the disclosure of confidential information, which may be far more sensitive for companies. And I think it's not just for IS-37, of course.
And Tom?
I guess I think most of it's been said, but maybe I'll add one thing. So I think Nick's point about, you know, the setting the thing at about zero is important. And also, one of the things that bothered me about the existing systems is over time, systems are modified. And this is, as long as the way it's written, it sounds like, as long as I keep this out of my system, however logical it would be for my next system to include it, I get this pass. And so I, if we do put something in, undue cost or effort, I think handles Jin Chow's concern nicely, because you can go get market stuff without undue cost or effort easily. If systems change and it's easy to write it into your system, undue cost or effort, I think, would cover that as well. So anyway, I was a bit uncomfortable with this recommendation, although I'm sort of a bit sympathetic.
Sue?
I think some fair points have been made about the risks of this approach. Personally, I'm not so convinced we need to be thinking about a cost relief specifically for this, for the reason that we're talking about disaggregation. And I would think that things built up from items and systems are easier to disaggregate rather than some of the other things we require disclosures of in other circumstances. So I prefer not to go down this path.
Okay. Maybe it's just helpful to share why we thought, or maybe I would use passionately believe, we need a cost relief, but maybe I'm putting words into your mouth, I'm not sure. But I certainly did, because of linkages to other proposals in the project. So what we are not discussing this month, we're hoping to discuss next month, is, for example, proposal relating to analysis of operating expenses in the notes. Many of you have taken part in the outreach, you know, feedback that this is all very costly. And we will be looking at ways to provide reliefs of that. And it was very bothersome thinking of interaction of that with proposals, general guidance for disaggregation, because if you have general guidance for disaggregation without any cost relief, you can simply go down the logical path of applying that guidance, forces you to provide information about nature of expenses regardless of how costly it is. So how can we at the same time discuss providing cost relief for specific disclosure requirements, but not consider generally, because people will say, well, you're not giving us cost relief because
we don't do it specifically, but generally we lead there. So we just, this for us was a way to reconcile the two, and I completely take the points about this specific approach about relying on internal reporting system, maybe giving too much of a get out of jail card. But some kind of linkage, I think, is quite important, or if not, explanation of how do we see this in practice is important. So that was really the main reason we have this discussion.
Mary?
Two things to think about. One is, I think Tom's recommendation about think more undue cost and effort rather than new forms or different, the version that you proposed in here in terms of cost relief is good advice in terms of when we need a cost relief. Let's start first with the ones that we have and where there's some practice built up around them. But the second one is, I think your concern about don't we need general relief if we think we may need to ask you to give some specific relief for a specific disclosure that's coming down the road. Because I think the way we structure standards and exceptions, et cetera, if there is an exception provided, we don't play gotcha with the way we write standards. So if we grant relief in a specific area, or if we have, let's say, a scope exception, you don't get dragged back into the thing you've just been given relief from by a general requirement. So I think in response to your expression of concern about why the staff put in this analysis here is, if when you bring us the discussion about operating expense disclosures, if based on the feedback we have, you think there is an area for which a specific, where cost benefit may dictate that we should consider cost relief. A, I'd recommend that you look at undue cost and effort. And B, I think it's clear that if we provided it for that item or that thing, that the general requirement that Anne was discussing here would not override the specific relief we provided. So I think you're okay on that concern.
Yeah, I don't want to turn into nature function. Yeah. There are other things we can take offline. I'm thinking of the function nature combination as well. But we can,
I think the only thing I would say is that if we do decide that the nature function...
Or anything else.
Or anything else. Yeah. Well, it's sort of specifically, I suppose, about disaggregation and giving information about different groupings. If there we conclude that, yes, there would be material information, but we think that it's not, the cost exceeds the benefit, how can we say that when we think generally there will be no other such situations? I mean, it's just the sort of, the logic doesn't quite stack up. That's my only concern, that we can't say... Because this is such a general requirement, we can't say that we have assessed the costs and benefits for all the situations in which it will apply. And we know, potentially, because we've decided here, then that specific situation, we would give a cost relief. So why are we not allowing for that possibility in some other situation where we don't have specific requirements?
Because of the policy lesson we learned with don't delegate this decision.
Yes, probably something similar. I understand why you propose such an approach, given the fact that, of course, requiring an entity to provide both a P&L by function and a P&L by nature, and notably operating expenses by function by nature, is virtually asking a preparer to provide two different reportings, or a reporting by matrix, which is impossible to perform, of course. So, of course, this is impossible. So, in this instance, if an entity is providing a P&L by function, then we should have in mind to require, at least in my view, to require certain minimal expenses by nature, which I perfectly appreciate there's a need for, but of course not all. Then, like Marie said, I think we need to be, if we provide such a practical relief, we need to be specific where we provide the specific relief. When I read your question in combination with Nick's comment, in an absurd situation whereby we as a board would require for a new standard a new set of disclosure, but then we would have an overarching principle saying that if it's not provided in the internal system, the disclosure is not to be provided. I mean, it's where it goes a bit too far. Of course, I perfectly appreciate that if you have in mind a PNL by function and by nature, it fits perfectly to the need. Of course, you're totally right.
Okay, what I suggest is that we close this discussion by seeing where board members stand on question five. So can I see a show of hand who in the board supports? Sorry, Tom?
Clarify exactly as worded?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So not reverting to undue cost of effort to make it clear. But we can ask that whether that will change. So let's first ask the question that the staff has put forward. So who agrees with the staff recommendation? Not all at once. All right. Okay. So would any board member be inclined to change his or her vote if we went from internal systems to undue cost or effort, which is the general requirement that we have?
If I could just speak to that for a second, because I think the point Anne made, first of all, Mary's right, technically we're protected. However, consistency is valued out in the world. And if we were to, down the road, say, you don't have to do the nature note if there's undue cost or effort for the sake of argument, this is the disaggregation that all the way through we've said is the most important disaggregation. So we put in a thing that says if we don't say undue cost or effort for all the other disaggregations, and then we say we'll have undue cost or effort for something that if you read all our documents was the most important one, there is a lack of consistency there that I think, if I don't know, I don't want to put words in Anne's mouth, but I think that kind of lay behind what she and Aida were saying. And so I just be a bit careful about just the, it's kind of more of like a reputational, you know, to have really coherent logic in what we do, even if we're covered by the way we could write it. So I am sympathetic to, I think, that latent concern. And that's why I would like something like undue cost or effort for the consistency.
I'd be nervous about voting on the fly, because I think where we've used undue cost or effort in the past, and if I look at the two examples we've got here in particular, 9 and 17, it was in the context of requirements that we knew were pretty hard work, you know, forward-looking forecasts of credit expectations and all sorts of projections and scenario analysis thinking about IFRS 9. And so it was a very considered, we really need to do something to help. Personally, I'd prefer that we looked at it in the context of the scenario that Aida's flagged, which is a fair example, because in that situation, we already know that people have got concerns about how easy it is to pick things apart because of the internal costing systems, et cetera, that they've got. But the challenge we've got is that if we use it more generally, we're also going to be covering far more simple scenarios where it is just groups of, you know, assets, particular types of bonds or whatever, and how much do you pull it apart. And do we really want to hand over such a generic tool as undue cost of effort, which is very in the eye of the beholder, in such a broad range of circumstances? So personally, I'd rather look at it in the context of the specific case we've got in mind and then maybe think about whether it deserves to be extrapolated to some other situations. Because in the way that you sort of said, well, we can't really assess whether this sort of cost-benefit trade-off works given the massive spectrum, we similarly can't really assess how dangerous it is for us to hand that assessment over given the spectrum.
Yeah.
So there's two sides to that.
Good point.
To use one of our favorite words from this morning, let me compliment Sue's comment with...
yeah, it only works that way around.
another concern with the permission you're asking us for in question five, which is it's expressed as the general requirement to disclose information. Disclose information is an incredibly broad category, as opposed to if you really mean this to be to disaggregate.
Yeah, no, I meant that.
But I mean, if I think about what it would mean to say apply undue cost and effort to every disclosure of every piece of information, that would be a rather sweeping thing. So I think the reason I said compliments is it's another reason maybe not to revise the question on the fly.
I realize that we do have two remaining questions, but some board members do have a hard stop. So my proposal would be that we reconvene on Friday, if that's possible, at 11:45.
We probably know the answer to number 7.
Well,
it's the same as the other one, isn't it? Well, just in a different context.
I think we have enough right
to yes.
Rest, would you say?
I'm not sure.
No.
Because unusual items.
So we do five of them.
Yeah, I think it would be better.
Safer ground, because it's difficult to predict how much discussion we will be having, and I would rather not cut off an ongoing discussion, but rather have that confined in one go, if that's okay.
So we
can
have some more papers.
Then push your luck. All right. Thanks very much, board members. Then we close it for today, and we'll have an extra session on Friday to deal with the remaining two questions there. Okay? Thank you.